Hey, I'm Michael Durenda.
And I'm Jake Bennett.
And welcome to episode 15 of the North Meet South web podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome back. It's been a couple weeks. I feel like we say that every single time, but I'm going to give a couple excuses here anyway. Not too long ago, my daughter was admitted to the hospital, which is never a fun time, but she had a liver transplant a couple years ago, and this is just kind of part of the journey. So she gets sick every once in a while and has to get admitted to the hospital. And so it's crazy that the doctors are like, yeah, she's experiencing mild organ rejection. So like her body is rejecting the organ that she got, right? Which seems insane. It's very scary, but it's actually pretty common for these patients to have some sort of rejection, which is weird because I always think like organ rejection, that's like worst news you could possibly get for somebody who's received an organ, you know? But anyway, everything's looking good, but that's kind of taken up a lot of my time recently. So I'm very thankful and grateful that that's kind of behind us for the time being. She's still on some meds and whatnot, but doing well. So that's been taking up my time. And now it is the American holiday of Thanksgiving. Michael, you guys don't celebrate Thanksgiving. How dare you?
Yeah, we basically don't celebrate a lot of anything, do we?
No Halloween.
It would be nice.
No Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
You guys are just...
We do have
terrible.
Christmas.
Just terrible.
And Australia Day.
Australia Day, right. So what is that? Tell me what that is.
It's kind of divisive now because for a long time it was the celebration of the settlement of Australia, the landing of the first fleet and all that sort of stuff. And that's kind of taken a darker turn in the last, I don't know, I guess 10 years or so when our Indigenous culture has sort of started... looking more of it as an invasion day, and they don't want to celebrate Australia Day because it was the day that, you know, white man came to the country and slaughtered their families that sort of stuff. So one of our states has actually just announced that next year they're going to change the date of Australia Day so it doesn't coincide with the landing of the first fleet. And there's obviously a lot of backlash from that from the privileged white folk. So, yeah, I mean, it's probably just easier to move the date.
It is what it is, right?
Yeah, no, it's probably easy just to move the date and make everybody happy.
Yeah, that doesn't seem like too big of a deal.
Yeah, obviously, if you move the date to make the Indigenous folks happy, then you're going to upset all the, you know, the quote unquote Aussies that. Like it's been like that for 200 years sort of thing. So
yeah, and plus you gotta figure out like holiday schedules. That's probably the bigger thing, you know. What I'm saying, it's like everybody kind of plans already around this one date, so if everybody switched at the same time, that'd be fine. But if you have like one state changing and then the rest of them not, then you got families who are trying to get together on one day and it's a different day, that might be a little bit messy. But yeah,
so there's that. But other than that, we don't really get excitement.
Yeah. Oh, that's a bummer, dude. We had, speaking of excitement, we had some excitement here this morning. We had all just kind of woken up and we're hanging out in the living room. There's like, my wife has four other siblings and all of the siblings are here with their kids at her parents' house. And so we're sitting in the living room and the lights go out. I'm like, that's weird. What? That's odd. Okay. So my father-in-law goes downstairs and flips the switch on the breaker and the lights come back. And we're like, all right, that's weird. That's okay. So I see what I think to be like, it's a cold morning. I see out the front door what I think to be dryer vent steam coming out of the side of the house, you know, no big deal. And within about a couple minutes, like somebody banging on the front door. I'm like, what is going on? So I open the front door and this lady's like, your house is on fire. I'm like, what? So I look and there, the light that's usually next to the door there was like a ball of flame. So it was like melting the siding on the house. It was like fire. So everybody freaks out and all the kids run to the garage and my father-in-law goes and grabs his fire extinguisher and puts it out. All of the fire trucks from everywhere came. I've got video of it. I'll have to put it up on Twitter. The kids were pretty excited that the fire trucks came. That was cool. But thankfully, this lady stopped and told us because it could have caught the rest of the house. She, you know, we found out pretty quick.
Yeah.
It was a little bit scary, though. So glad to be safe.
Yeah. Just as well there was someone walking around the streets early in the morning, I suppose.
Yeah. Oh, it never happens either. I mean, like, they were out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah,
so
right.
That was, that was definitely a blessing that somebody, like, was kind enough to stop and let us know that the house was going to, you know, was catching on fire.
Yeah.
So. That was my morning. So So yeah. Well, let's go ahead and get into things. The first thing I kind of wanted to mention here, I don't know how quickly we're going to get this released, but there are a couple of deals that are too good to not mention here. The first one is that there is a sale on Spark. So Spark is Taylor Otwell's, I kind of call it, it's Bootstrap for SaaS. You know how like Bootstrap is to CSS, like Twitter's Bootstrap is to CSS, like this, you know, starter package for it. That's what Spark is for your SaaS app. So it has all the features that you would need to kind of build the skeleton of your SaaS app to allow you to get up and running really quickly. And normally it's, I think, $250 for the unlimited version and $99 for the single license, and everything's half off. So that's going on. And Michael, you had mentioned something about the integration tests for Spark as well.
Yeah, a couple of days ago, I think Taylor had tweeted that he had open sourced the integration tests. So they're all up on GitHub now. So I guess if you ever wanted to see how someone else would write their test for a, not just someone else, I guess Taylor Otwell is probably the person you want to see how they go about writing their tests. So they're all up on GitHub now. We'll throw a link in the show notes so you can have a look and see how Taylor goes about testing different parts of the framework.
And this is also, this app is also written in Vue as well. So this might be a good starter for those of us who are kind of just new to Vue and trying to figure out how we test that front-end stuff as well. So that might be interesting to take a look at it. So even if you missed the deal on Spark, you've got that to look forward to. Kind of in the same vein as testing, Adam Wathen has a course that he's been working on really hard for the last, I don't know, 5-6 months. He announced it at Laracon 2016 US that's going to be called Test-Driven Laravel. Michael, would you mind talking a little bit about that, kind of what the project is he's building and kind of what the goal of it is?
Yeah, so a lot of testing content that you find out on the internet is very, very like foobar baz. It doesn't really have any real world use. It sort of gives you a very rough outline of how things work, of what you might do, of what certain functions are. What Adam's done with Test-Driven Laravel is he's basically building a comprehensive course that is step-by-step from idea to finished product, where he's building this application called TicketBeast, which is allowing event promoters to go out and create an event, to list tickets for it, to process payments for it, to sell the tickets, all of that straight away, taking you through basically how you would test a real-life application. So he basically has some example videos up on his website for Test-Driven Laravel, and he's been releasing some as he goes along to his to the mailing list for that, so you can get in and get some early looks at it. I've been speaking with him a bit about it over the last month or so as he's been progressing through it, and the quality of the content, and basically looking at that and going, this isn't that hard, I should be doing it more often. And it's encouraging me now in my work projects and also my side projects to be more proactive about writing my tests first. So it's comforting to know that the way that I was doing testing previous to watching any of these videos was the way that someone else was doing it, and that really it just came down to being too lazy. So yeah, it's good.
And it's cool too, because like, you know, from idea all the way to completion, it's cool to it's almost like you're pairing with him on this stuff. So you're thinking about, okay, how would I do that specific thing? And then Adam is saying, all right, here's how I would do it, and here's how I would test it. And not only the easy things, right? Like you said, not foobar baz, like these are very cookie cutter examples, but all right, I need to hit Stripe. How do I build a test for that? I need to generate a PDF. How do I build a test for that? All these messy real life scenarios that are not often tested when you're looking at like a screencast or a quick tutorial. He yeah. covers all that stuff. So I think it's about 18 hours of video content, which is, number one, it's ambitious that he's literally created an entire app in 18 hours.
Yeah.
So you get to see every single piece of it. In 18 hours, it's done, start to finish. So that's crazy in and of itself, but it's just a lot of really valuable content. I've been able to see kind of like, he kind of has them like 1.1, 1.2, 1.3. I've been able to see the 1 dots and the 2 dots, and it's really, really good stuff. So I've learned a ton just even in looking at what he's kind of pre-released to his newsletter people. So I think what he's doing is he's going to have almost like an early release on Tuesday. I don't want to spoil what he's going to call it, so I won't announce it for him. But I think he's going to have a early release for those people who are really interested in getting their hands on it. And he's giving a really pretty deep discount on it. So I would encourage you guys, if you didn't find any great Cyber Monday deals, hold out for Adam's Tuesday deal, and you won't be disappointed, I promise.
Absolutely.
Let's see. There's also a 50% off on O'Reilly Books, which Matt Stauffer, congratulations on publishing Laravel Up and Running. I know it seems like it's been a really, really long time coming, so I know that's a huge kind of burden lifted off him, and that's 50% off on Monday as well. So typically the ebook is $40. You can get it for $20. So I've read a pre-release copy of it, and again, really, really awesome book. And you can learn a lot even in just the first couple chapters. So $20, well worth it.
Yep, definitely. Highly recommend the book.
Yep, absolutely. Michael, we had talked a little bit about a problem that I was kind of having this last week with these huge upload sizes. And I had talked to you a little bit about it. And basically the issue that I was running into with Laravel and really with any sort of PHP installation is that if you end up with a file upload that is too large, so that is if your, I think it's your post max size INI setting is smaller than the file size that's coming through, what ends up happening is your entire request, all of the globals, that is the $_post, $_get, $_files, all of those pieces get wiped out of your request. And you had done some research, I think. And why did you say that was? I know that you said there was, that you looked into it, I think.
Yeah, it's a PHP related thing. So it's not specific to Laravel. This is going to happen in whether you're using Symfony or Laravel or Cake or writing it yourself. And basically what happens is that PHP will just go ahead and nuke the get superglobal anytime you do that. And I guess I didn't look too much further than that into it, but I suppose it's something to do with some dodgy characters into your post form and cause it to break that way, compromising your site or whatever. It's definitely a PHP related thing, probably some obscure security issue.
Yeah, and so the problem it was causing is I would send this through this file that was too large, and it was wiping out all of those variables coming through in that request. And what would happen is you would get the token mismatch exception, because if you're using CSRF protection, which is enabled by default on all Laravel post and put and patch routes, it would not find the token in your request, and so it throws a token mismatch exception. Looked through some issues and found out that in Laravel 5.0, there's actually a middleware called Verify Post Size. And it does exactly what it says. It verifies that the post size that's coming through is not larger than what is set in your post max size in your php.ini file. So if you're doing a regular post, it verifies that post size, and it will throw a upload too large error before you get to the token mismatch exception. So that's good. The problem is that Laravel also uses method spoofing. So you have this idea of REST. So and if you're going to send through a create, you would use a post verb. If you're going to send through an edit action, you'd use a patch verb. But the browsers do not support a patch request by default. So what Laravel and some other frameworks do is they essentially send through a little hidden field underscore method that will send through the method that you're wanting to use through the browser. So for example, let's say I'm editing something and I send through my form. There is a little underscore method that is equal to patch on my request, and what happens is the file size is too large, it wipes that out, and then what Laravel will do is as it's trying to parse the route, it doesn't find a matching route for that verb because it thinks it's a post, because it doesn't get the method spoofing. Does that make sense? It's kind of a complex issue, so
yeah.
Sorry if it's not making sense. But what ends up happening is you get a HTTP not found or a method not allowed HTTP exception in Laravel. So essentially what I did this last week after chasing that down, which as difficult as it is to explain, I'm sure you can appreciate how hard it was to figure out that that's what was happening. My goal is to make sure that nobody ever has to deal with that again. So I've got an issue out there hoping to fix it. And essentially what I'm going to have to do is on every request, you'll have to validate the post size before you even do any route matching. So that's sort of, if it's not a get, you're going to have to verify the post size. And if it's larger, then you just have to throw an exception before you do any route matching. So anyway, that was the solution. It's not implemented yet, but hopefully it will be soon.
Yeah. It sounds like a bit of digging. I had an issue like that this week that wasn't quite as annoying, but I had somewhere in one of my application files, I had put in a rogue capital G, and every time I ran my unit test, I would get the little dot that says the test passed, and then I would get a capital G. And I spent not two full days, but I spent about 2 days tracking this letter G down.
Oh my gosh.
So it was just hanging out at the top of my model factory.
That's horrible. That's literally one of the most frustrating things. I had that with a data file that I was importing this week. I had to import a CSV, and there was one of the fields ended in a backslash. So it escaped that. And I'm talking like, we're not talking like, you know, 10 records here. We're talking like thousands of records here. So yeah, I had to hunt that one down. That was a fun one. Yeah. Okay, so the other thing that I was working on this last week, and actually for a couple weeks, Michael, you and Matt Stauffer kind of worked together on this open source thing, Suggestive. Can you explain to, I know you've kind of given us an idea of what that is. Can you kind of give us a quick rundown of what it is, the elevator pitch?
Matt and I worked on Confomo, but Suggestive, I do know a little bit about.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
So Suggestive was an idea that I think Matt had for the Laravel official podcast, where they would be able to take, rather than trying to get ideas and questions from listeners via Twitter, it was a way for them to collect ideas from listeners that they could then have other listeners vote on and then, you know, make suggestions directly to those folks in order to have content for future episodes of the Laravel podcast. So it's basically just a to-do list, I guess, for that to work. And Jeffrey Way did shame Matt into finally finishing that between the last two podcast episodes. So it's good that it's out there.
Yeah, I saw that. He did launch it finally, which was good. So I was working on that a little bit, basically just because I wanted to see a full view project, like with like, you know, almost like a single page app view project where he's using view router and using view components for all of the different pieces. So this was a little bit of a revelation to me. I didn't have any idea how this worked before, but essentially what view router is everything in your app, almost everything in your app, sends to one specific page, which is like, you know, slash whatever. And then your view router picks up from there. And it just is just string matching, almost exactly like what, you know, the Laravel router does, is it just kind of matches on those strings. And then what it does is the view router will render a component. So that's how it works. So in Laravel, you match a route, it hits a controller, you render a view. In view router, you match a route and it renders a component onto that page. So you could, you know, each component might be called something like user homepage would be the name of the component. And then that component has in itself other components that it's using. So you would have on that page, you know, suggest a topic component, list all topics component or something like that. And then all of those kind of are composed together to create and render your view. So that was interesting to me. But the problem that we were having is that property syncing was turned on for these components. So you can pass properties from your parent down to your child components. And if you have property sync on or prop sync on, what happens is anytime you change one of those properties in your child, it syncs that data back up to the parent components. And that is not Vue 2.0 friendly. So I had to do some refactoring. And in the case of in the process of doing those refactorings, I also wanted to use ES6 arrow functions to kind of clean things up. and made some interesting discoveries and interesting mistakes. And I spent this week kind of writing about that in a little blog post that I called originally. I was trying to be so clever, Michael. It was going to be a terrible title. Vue S6. So like V-U-E-S-6, right? Vue S6. That's genius, I thought, but it's just nobody would understand it. And
it's genius, but it'll be hard to find.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was thinking. You're not doing anybody any favors by naming it Vue S6. Good luck remembering how to type that in, or if somebody's looking for how to use arrow functions and things like that with their Vue components, they'd never find it. So I renamed it. And I think I named it how to use ES6 arrow functions to clean up your Vue components or Vue modules or something like that.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, this is one of those things. I think I sent it to you to give it a read already.
Yeah, I had a read over it earlier this week.
You're one of my editors.
Yeah.
What'd you think?
I thought it was pretty good. I mean, because I was at the same way that you sort of mentioned at the top of that post, more arrow functions are better. And so, yeah, I just put arrow functions everywhere because it was shorter to write without, you know, understanding the implications of lexical this and all that kind of stuff that you get along with using those arrow functions. So now I've got a better understanding of when to use arrow functions and when to use sort of the shorthand syntax for writing or for defining methods and things like that. So we're probably going to throw that into our sort of base repo that we use for Laravel applications, and that'll be a guideline for us going forward how to work with Vue. So thank you for that. That saves me some writing.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of what I was going for too, is, okay, when is it appropriate to use arrow functions? Because that's exactly what happened. I started using arrow functions, which if you haven't looked into those, essentially what they are is, and you know how in Laravel, if you are in PHP in general, if you're trying to use an anonymous function, you have to type function, paren, and then your function body. Well, imagine if you could just kind of take that function and drop it. Jack Frew would love that. You know, he talked about that not too long ago. It's just these function, you know, this word function littering your entire code base all over the place. So that's sort of what arrow functions are like in ES6, is you kind of get to drop that function and you just keep the parens, and then you just do a little arrow operator and then your function body. So I started using those throughout the code base, and Matt Stauffer reviewed my pull request and said, well, you know, we probably need to make this consistent. If you're using them down here, you should probably use them at the top level too. So I started changing everything out, and everything broke. Everything broke. The entire thing. It was a mess. And so I was talking to some guys, and Andrew Delpretti, who is like my JavaScript guru go-to man, said, you know, it might be the lexical this. I'm like, lexical this? What are you talking about? And essentially what that means is that when you use an arrow function, it doesn't have its own context for their keyword this. It just inherits this from whatever the parent scope is. And I'm sure I'm saying that a little bit wrong, but when this is really handy is when you need to have access to your Vue component. So for instance, if you're doing a HTTP, if you're doing like an AJAX request out to get some information, and then when you return it, let's say you're going out to get a list of topics from an endpoint, an API endpoint. And when you return those topics, you want to set those as a data item in your Vue component. What you used to have to do is at the very top of your method, you'd have to say something like let VM equal this. So that holds the value of this in the variable VM. And then after you've done your HTTP, your AJAX call out and your callback function, then you'd have to say, okay, vm.topics equals the topics that were returned. Well, now you can just say this topic, this.topics equals topics. So anyway, it's a little bit confusing to explain on air. Give it a read though. It'll definitely kind of help you clean up your Vue modules. It looks a lot nicer and it's not difficult to learn. It just takes somebody explaining it. So
yeah, well, you did a good job of explaining it. And, I mean, it's pretty easy to pick up for somebody who has at least some rough understanding of JavaScript. The terminology can be a bit, like, it'll hit you initially if you're not really familiar with things like lexical this and all that. But yeah, it's certainly something with most things JavaScript, like, you learn it once, and then once you start using it, you forget why you're using it, but you know when the right time sort of is. So it's nice to have the reference point. And with any luck, as backend developers, we won't have to revisit this front end stuff for another 10 years or so. So
yeah, right. Exactly. So anyway, that was a lot of fun to write. It's been a long time since I've had a chance to dive into JavaScript stuff. So that was a good experience for me. And it was fun writing that and learning some new things, especially with ES6. I feel like I'm so behind when it comes to JavaScript things. This kind of like was able to be like, okay, I'm not super far behind. I'm not to the point where I can't catch up a little bit at least. So I did a lot of reading and learned a ton about ES6 stuff. And it's exciting. Yeah. It's really cool. I can see why there's a lot of people kind of jumping back to JavaScript. Not jumping back to JavaScript, but getting really excited about it these days. There's a lot of cool stuff going on.
Wes Boss has got his ES6 course as well, I think, on sale until Monday. But that's on sale for like 50% off, which is great for the amount of content that is in there.
Yeah. Jeffrey Way has the ES6 course as well, which I really want to watch, but I haven't had a chance to yet. So I need to get on that. Well, honestly, man, today's episode might have to be a little bit short. I've got screaming kids right outside the door here waiting for me to come out and throw a football with them. Uncle Jake went and played football in the backyard with all the kids yesterday, and they've been begging me to do so ever since. So it's time to play some Rugrat football in the backyard, freezing cold Ohio.
Don't take it too easy on them.
Yeah, no. I'm going to tackle them.
Yeah.
Tackle them all. Break some bones. Make them feel the pain. So, excellent. All right, man. Well, hey, it's been really good catching up at least.
Yeah.
And I'm sure hopefully we'll get back to a normal schedule here now that things have settled down a little bit in the Bennett household.
Hopefully. Good to hear everything's back on track though.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that. Yeah. And you guys are going to get a car today. Hopefully.
Yeah, we're going to go for a test drive. I've got my whole game plan. So it all basically hinges on whether or not my wife says anything. So,
oh man. So you guys have you told her that you're actually wanting to buy a car?
Oh yeah, we know.
Or
yeah,
are you just
kind
of like, oh, we're just going to go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So we,
I don't know if you were like going into like, let's just go test drive a car, honey.
Yeah. Yeah. We're future planning a little bit. Her car that she drives to work every day, we took in for a service and it's sort of on the approach to 200,000 kilometers and it's going to need its timing belt changed. And there's a few other bits and pieces that I said, look, we're going to need a bigger car anyway. Let's just go and sort that out now. And that way we won't have to worry about it later. We're not going to have to worry about spending too much money on the car that we've got now.
Right.
So it's probably a bit of an extreme jump in, you know, spending a few thousand dollars on fixing the car we have and spending tens of thousands on a new one. But while we can, and before we have a real need for it, we'll go and do that. And yeah, I'm pretty excited.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Buying a new car is always like a fun adventure. Yeah.
It's very different over here, though. Good luck with that. Like a lot of, I just listening to Ian Landsman and when he spoke about buying his truck, you folks over there basically just lease everything, right? You don't really buy cars.
Well, it just depends on the person, I think. I always buy used cars. That's what I do. Mm-hmm. New cars are so expensive and they lose so much value as soon as you drive off the lot. If you're getting a new car today, good for you.
Yeah.
By new car, for me, that means I am buying a car that is new to me.
Yeah.
But I've only ever bought used vehicles. And, you know, honestly, I'm okay with that. By the time when they're coming off the lot at the used car place, I mean, depending, you know, making sure you get to a decent place, they might as well be new. They clean them so well and everything's so good. And, you know, we got ours with maybe 40,000 miles on it, the van that we have right now. And it's super great. And we got it for a crazy awesome deal.
Yeah.
You know, $20,000 off of what it would have cost new.
Well, even with a new car, the amount of time it takes to get here from like Asia, By the time you get a new car, it's sort of 6 months old anyway. So,
exactly. Yeah, there you go. That's good logic. I will say this. Next episode, we need to talk about my car, Minty.
Okay.
That is the name of my car. That is my daily driver. And I have got some stories for you, my friend. In fact, at the place that I work on Fridays, the nonprofit I work at, my car is a running joke. Anyway, you'll understand when we talk about it next episode.
I look forward to it.
Let's talk about Minty. Let's put that on the list. All right. Sounds good, man.
All right.
All right, buddy. Well, good talking to you. We'll talk sometime soon.
Yeah. Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Happy almost Australia Day, whenever that is to you.
No worries. And just before we do go and forget, our show notes for this episode will be available at northmeetsouth.audio/15. We are on Twitter @northsouthaudio. And as always, If you could like and rate us 5 stars in your podcatcher of choice, that really helps us get in front of more people and helps to get some new listeners.
All right, man. Take it easy.
Yeah, bye.
Bye.